following is a presentation of Learfield IMG College. From the Georgia Southern Sports Network, powered by Learfield IMG College.
Wake up, Eagle Nation! Touchdown, Georgia Southern!
This is Inside Eagle Nation, your all-access look into Eagle athletics.
Taking a look through all the other action in Georgia Southern athletics this past week. A lot of road action. A lot of teams hitting the old I-16 out of town.
Getting on the steel horse and taking us to parts north, south, west, wherever. Can't really go too much farther east.
Now let's return to the Learfield IMG College studios. Here are your hosts, Colin Lacey and Danny Reed.
That's a fact, Jack.
Welcome into another edition of Inside Eagle Nation, episode number 146. We are fresh off the first game for Georgia Southern football. It was a 30-25 victory for the Eagles over Gardner-Webb. It wasn't necessarily the prettiest thing at the end of the day, but you are looking at a 1-0 record going into week number two against the FAU Owls as the Eagles will hit the road down to Boca Raton to take on the FAU Fighting Owls and head coach Willie Taggart. A rematch of last year where Georgia Southern got the victory toward the tail end of the season. It was supposed to be at the beginning of the season.
Yeah.
You go to the end of the season. At the end of the day, you get a 20-3 victory over a really good FAU team who had a really good defense last year. A lot of that's returning, but we will dive into all of that when we get into the later editions of Inside Eagle Nation. But Colin Lacey, Danny Reed, fresh off game one.
Well, number one, happy Labor Day, I guess.
Yes, happy Labor Day to everybody.
This is how we honor Labor Day. It's our tradition during football season. We labor. Yes. Whether it's doing a coach's show, now they're on Thursdays now, called Hail Southern Live, or it's in this case doing the edition of the podcast. But just as you were talking about FAU, it was supposed to be the second game of last year.
Yes.
COVID forced it to move to the first week of December. So because of that, this is the second time that the Eagles are going to play the Owls in a five-game stretch. Now, granted, it's separated by an entire offseason. But it's strange when you
hadn't thought about that.
Get a team that close to the end of the year in non-conference play and then have the same team that close to the beginning of the next season. First time we would have ever gone to Boca Raton. I think it's the first time we're going to South Florida since FIU in 2004. Been down there for men's basketball a couple times, but just haven't been down there for football.
We made the trek across Alligator Alley.
That was a fun Facebook Live.
Unless you were that one person in a toll booth.
We got both wins that trip. Went to Florida Gulf Coast when they had that really good team.
Yeah.
When Joe Dooley was still there. Shut them down. Changed up some things on defense. I remember Mike Hughes hit a couple long threes.
Oh, weird.
B.J. Gladden hit about a 30-footer with normal rhythm. It is as if he was trying to beat the shot clock buzzer. He just caught it and shot a 30-footer. And it looked like Mike Hughes shooting threes. And then driving over to FAU. The swim team came in the second
half.
That's
right.
Because Georgia Southern blew two different double-digit leads, but then the swim team got there. Jake Allsmiller got hot. I think he had five threes. Georgia Southern got the win, and then we had the long trip from South Florida back home. And now we get to do it with Eagle football. And considering how difficult the schedule is going to get after this weekend, being 2-0 may be a lot more important than just being 2-0,
yeah,
if you catch where I'm going.
No, I think you're exactly right. And I think And you and I have talked about this, and it may not be necessarily a popular opinion, but this game kind of feels like a Arkansas State back in 2017. Now, we know how that turned out. He was out of bounds. It should have been an Eagle win. But
16. But even 16. You could say it for 17, too, because that was Georgia Southern's first home game after all the shenanigans with Irma having to move the home
That's
game
right.
against New
Give
Hampshire
it.
To Birmingham. And Georgia Southern was the last team to host a home game that year. But
it's going to be
we'll get there.
Yeah, we'll get there when
we'll
get there.
We'll get there.
A lot to cover on this week's edition of Inside Eagle Nation as pretty much everybody in the fall is starting to get ramped up. Men's golf will start their season on Monday at the Gopher Invitational at Sunday and Monday, rather.
Is that at the Caddyshack course?
It's at the Windsong Farm Golf Club.
It's a joke.
I don't know. It might be the same one. I don't know.
I doubt it's at Bushwood because I don't think Bushwood's a real course.
It's up in Maple Plain, Minnesota. So
it better be if it's the Gopher.
You better be.
Congratulations to Georgia Southern men's golfer Jake Maples getting married over the weekend.
Congrats.
Mm-hmm.
Women's golf will start their reign under Mimi Burke next Monday morning down in St. Simons with the match at Fernandina Country Club. I hear that's a really, really nice course down there.
I've not been. You know, I don't play a ton of golf unless it involves a putter, but it seems like Mimi's been here a lot longer than she has just because the women's golf season is a little bit different. They play both in the fall and in the spring.
Yeah.
So you can get caught up in just how long she has been here, but her tenure officially starts in St. Simon's, which, rough life.
Yeah.
Good for her.
Odd that down at Frederica in Fernandina, the tournament is actually hosted by Augusta University.
Well, I would suspect that Augusta National is probably unavailable. I would love to go in the Masters one day. When I was with the, I've told this before, with the Charleston River Dogs, the hotel that the team would stay at in the South Atlantic League, we would have to go by Washington Road. We would drive by the course every day. And I could see in the main gate, I could kind of see the outline of the famous flowers that gets put up on CBS every year. But there is an ordinance in the city of Augusta that the tops of buildings cannot be over the tree line to see into the golf course. So that's how protective they are
of
those grounds.
You would think somebody by now would have found a loophole to that.
I found that out about 10 years ago. I didn't believe it, but one of our utility guys, huge golf fan, and I think that his dad had told them that, and he shared that with the team when we were there, because Charleston and Augusta only separated by a couple hours. We played Augusta about 40 times. But that was a very, there's Augusta National. Just drive by it. They never invited the River Dogs in.
Well, no.
Different kind of grass over there.
Women's soccer had a news note come out earlier on last week as Marcella Montoya was named the Sun Belt Conference Offensive Player of the Week, and that's what happens when you have the first hat trick for Georgia Southern since 2015.
What, she had four goals in a span of two matches, and she had five all of last year?
She had four goals in the first part of the season. I can't remember if it was two or three matches, but
that was during the Charleston. That was the Charleston swing that Chris Adams just happened to put together.
Correct. And they actually finished up the Charleston swing. They had three games in Charleston in their first six matches. Not too bad.
I wonder how much they went and stopped on the side of the road for truffles or
I don't know if they got any pies.
Apple pies. We gotta send Christine another
cheese
one.
Cheese grits. Ooh. But they had some success in Charleston again with a 1-0 victory over the Citadel. Megan Prisby had the header to put Georgia Southern ahead for good at 1-0. They continued the three-game road stretch in Alabama as they fell 1-0 to Jacksonville State on Sunday. They got two matches coming up this weekend. The beginning of a doubleheader on Friday afternoon. It's a 4 p.m. kick as they will face off against the mighty Stetson. And then they head up the road to Macon to face the Mercer Bears at 6 p.m. Get your hatters going on. That's a big one coming up this weekend. Chris Adams and Georgia Southern women's soccer against the Stetson Hatters.
Another
PM kick.
Congratulations to former Georgia Southern football staffer Brian Brown. Savannah native picked up his first win as the head coach at Stetson. They play in the Pioneer League. They were victorious last weekend.
There you go. Bring it all together.
We're on tonight. We are on fire tonight.
Men's soccer has their tough schedule continued, tough for me to say, as they fell to number 6 North Carolina 3-0 in Chapel Hill on Friday night. Bounced back with a 2-0 clean slate win over Wofford. They will return home Friday. In the back end of that doubleheader, they will face North Florida beginning at 7 p.m.
300th win in Georgia Southern men's soccer history. Head coach John Murphy, his 100th career win as
even
a head
better.
Coach.
It's always nice when the milestones kind of even out for each other.
Yeah.
Get two birds with one stone.
I remember the one year where this had to be 20-some years ago, when Sammy Sosa was going on for his 500th home run. The 50th he hit that year would have given him 500. It didn't happen. But I remember specifically that the 50th he hit that season would have been his 500th overall. I almost saw A-Rod's 500th live in Baltimore.
Really?
I was sitting in the center field bleachers when he was playing for the Yankees. One of my best friends is Orioles fan, so we were down there that night. And the place was packed, of course. Number one, the Yankees, because the Orioles weren't any good. But one, the Yankees. Two, A-Rod going for 500. Every time he came up, I've never seen that many flash bulbs go off at once at a baseball game. And I'm just sitting there thinking, okay, see history tonight. And he didn't hit. I think he hit it a couple days later, but
you talk about the flashbulbs. The thing that I remember with the most flashbulbs I'd ever seen was at Bobby Cox's final game as a Braves manager.
That would do it.
Definitely did it. But Georgia Southern Cross Country will open up their season with the GMC Brickyard up in Milledgeville on Friday as they get it going under head coach Kelly Carter. Georgia Southern Volleyball had a tough weekend this past weekend at the Blazer Invitational. They fell to UAB 3-0 on Friday and then came up short against Kennesaw State 3-1 on Saturday. They return home to try to get things right in the Eagle Invitational Friday and Saturday. They will face FIU at 6 p.m. on Friday and then noon the first serve on Saturday as they take on Murray State.
And expectations are they should be as close to full strength as they could be. Remember the storyline from the weekend before when they went 3-0. They were without four starters, including Madison Brown and Chamblee Russell.
Yeah.
I think they're going to be just fine. I think they needed that road test to figure out where they were. I don't know if they thought that this was going to be an undefeated season, but they're still off to one of their best starts in recent memory, and this seems like a weekend where they could do some damage.
Getting into Georgia Southern football, again, we're going to recap everything with the Gardner-Webb game this past weekend, as well as dive into the FAU Owls coming up this weekend for Georgia Southern football as they head down to Boca Raton and FAU Stadium. But a couple of news notes coming out this week and last week after we talked to you last Monday. It came out on Tuesday that the NFL rosters, the initial NFL rosters, were announced and six Eagles make those lists. Tyler Bass and Matt Breida will be on the first roster in the NFL for the Buffalo Bills. Raymond Johnson making the roster with the New York Giants. Youngway Koo with the Falcons. Derek McKinnon out in Kansas City. And Kendall Vildor with the Chicago Bears. And last I saw, Kendall is number one on the depth chart.
Yeah, he's probably going to get a chance to start week one.
That's pretty awesome.
And for Raymond, somebody that was just here last year, it's such an awesome story. Number one, to go from undrafted to making your first roster. He's the number two defensive end behind former USC standout Leonard Williams. He grew up as a Giants fan. He didn't get a chance to wear 91 here because it was taken by Logan Hunt because he grew up a Justin Tuck fan. So he wore 92 because Michael Strahan. And just so happens last week, the Giants announced they're retiring Strahan's 92. And Raymond gets a chance to wear Justin Tuck's 91 now that he has made the roster. That's so cool.
All comes full circle, it seems. Yeah. It all worked itself out.
And it isn't just something where they were weak at that position and he found a way. Look, there's a chance he gets pretty good reps.
Yeah.
As the number two defensive end, and look, the Giants are a team that they've struggled in recent years, still dealing with a quarterback transition. Daniel Jones is going to be in his third year as a starter. He was a first-round pick out of Duke. Saquon Barkley, of course, had the terrible injury. It sounds like he may be as close to full go as he can be by their opener, but at least after Georgia Southern games on Thursdays or Saturdays, get a chance to watch another NFL team on Sundays with the other five that we'll be able to keep track of.
So again, Bass and Breida up in Buffalo, Raymond Johnson with the New York Giants, Youngway Koo still in Atlanta, Derek McKinnon in Kansas City, and Kendall Vildor with the Chicago Bears. Those will be the six Eagles for week one on NFL rosters.
And they start this coming Wednesday. I think you have the champions and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers playing the Dallas Cowboys. Can't play on Thursday because President Biden has an address, I think, this Thursday. And then this coming Sunday is when everybody lets fly.
Then it all gets going.
As usually, you'd have that first game on a Thursday night where the defending Super Bowl champion always plays, but they have to bump that to Wednesday.
It actually is Thursday still.
Oh, did they?
Yeah, Thursday.
Okay.
Cowboys and Buccaneers. I know you're a big fan of that game.
As a Washington football team rooter, 7-9, win the division.
You're not even
last
calling
year.
Yourself a fan?
And not the way
they've been demoted to a rooter.
Not the way they do things, man. Look, I love the hire of Ron Rivera, but I need to see a winning record before I reclaim the fandom, I guess. But Frank's happy about Raymond Johnson. He's a huge Giants fan.
I always forget he's a Giants fan.
We grew up that way.
That's true.
Grew up in New Jersey a lot. Yeah.
Breida and Bass and the Bills will be taking on the Steelers in week one. Youngway Koo and the Falcons will face off against the Eagles. A 1 o'clock kickoff. The New York Giants will have the Broncos at 4:25. The Chicago Bears will be in L.A. to take on the Rams at 8:20. That's the Sunday night football game. And then Kansas City will have the Cleveland Browns at 4:30 on Sunday as well. So all six Eagles will be playing on Sunday for week one.
Excellent.
Move along to the news note that came out, just a couple hours ago. But Brenton Williams, who a lot of fans didn't know the name necessarily coming into the stadium on Saturday.
Well, they saw him in the hair contest.
That's true.
During the offseason that Dexter Carter ended up winning, but Brenton got pretty far.
That was his little tease into Georgia Southern football.
Sunshine.
But he was named Sunbelt Conference Special Teams Player of the Week. And really well deserving. We talked about it throughout the broadcast. Because Rainer was not able to go on Saturday, Brenton Williams having to step in as a true freshman, and what's your introduction into college football? And I said it on postgame, and then I realized it wasn't right that the first time he stepped on a college football field was his 49-yard field goal, but it wasn't. He kicked off, but...
Semantics. Yeah, but you can't score points on a kickoff unless it results in a safety.
Yeah, semantics.
Exactly.
The first time he goes out to kick is a 49-yard field goal, and you brought up a note to Coach Lunsford that was the longest first attempt by a freshman.
Oh, BJ found that one. The longest first field goal ever made by a Georgia Southern kicker.
Wow.
And Chad was funny during his comments earlier today over at the FOC. He's like, if I would have realized it was 49 yards, I probably wouldn't have let him. But it's better to not think about things like that. If you're going to have your first one, get it out of the way, and he nailed it. And it was right down the middle, kicking towards the Gene Bishop Fieldhouse. He made from 25 in the second quarter, then he made from 23 during the second half. He also made all three of his PATs, and Coach brought up his kickoffs. He had two touchbacks, and three of the other five were near the border inside the five-yard line, which is where they try to put the football on kickoffs. They want to try to make sure it's high as they can. That was an issue late last season where too many line drive kicks had resulted in a couple of return touchdowns. But Brenton really showed what he could do, and the 12 points that he scored, most ever by a Georgia Southern kicker in his debut, too.
The thing that I really liked that Coach Lunsford talked about at the press conference earlier on this afternoon was how he was talking to Brenton. I think he was telling him about it was the longest first attempt by a freshman, and Brenton goes, "You just told me to go kick. I didn't really know how long it was. I just went out there and tried to kick it as hard as I could."
He probably got there, saw where Anthony Beck was putting his fingers down, then he looked up and said, "Dang, that's kind of far away." We've seen him make 55-yarders routinely. Yeah. He and Alex Rainer both, and we hope that Rainer's able to come back this weekend against FAU. We don't speak too much about kicking competitions, but maybe there's one brewing because of that kind of success and getting the initial laurels that he was able to do.
And Brenton is somebody that you and I have talked about, not necessarily on air, but we've talked about being at practice and seeing... Because Coach Lunsford and the staff do something that's kind of cool, and I haven't seen it done a whole heck of a lot. They call it, what is the...
Last kick in the world.
Last kick in the world.
And it's really early in practice, maybe first couple of periods.
And so what they do, you line up for a 50,
whatever
50 plus whatever. It's a long kick. It's 45 plus every time. And they get everybody on the team to circle around.
Make this nice little corridor. Yeah. And all you have to do is enough room to kick the ball.
Yeah, you've only got about 5 yards on either side. Yeah. And then everybody's screaming and yelling, and Coach Lunsford talked about it. You try to put as much pressure as you can simulate on these guys, and Brenton is somebody that has knocked down 55-yarders before with pretty relative ease.
In the last couple of years, that's how they've closed practices.
Yeah.
But this has been something where they've done it within the first, it seems like it's about first two or three periods where as soon as he yells out last kick in the world, everybody lines up real quick. Brenton typically makes it. Then they go to individual and then 2 hours more.
I like the ones where later on in the season to try to change things up and they get linemen to try to kick. That's my favorite.
Oh, man. Somebody made it last year.
Was it Raymond?
I think it might have been. Oh, that's going to bug me.
Yeah. There was somebody that nailed it.
Have to ask Chad about that.
Yeah. But congratulations to Brenton Williams, a Sunbelt Conference Special Teams Player of the Week.
First one for Georgia Southern since Caleb Hood last year when he returned his 49-yard punt return for a score against Florida Atlantic. Tie it all together. We're on this one. Tie.
No. You're right. Also, okay. Yeah, you're right.
Which one's mine?
Yeah, that's why we're on radio. We don't deal with all these cameras and nonsense.
It is nonsense.
If you have any questions about the Gardner-Webb game, looking forward to FAU, you can chime in on Facebook. Got a couple of comments already. Oh, Miss Tina saying that she's been looking forward to this all day. And somebody very special has popped onto our Facebook Live.
That could be...
probably not who you're thinking.
No.
Miss Stephanie Sloan. She just says hello. But you, my friend, almost backed us into a corner.
Because I have a way.
Because when we went to go meet with Scott Sloan on Thursday, he had two extra pieces of the honey bun cake.
This world famous honey bun cake that you've probably seen the last 3 years plus on social.
Well, if it's anywhere around me, you're not going to see it anymore.
Well, that's why it was on the table and we didn't realize what it was because there was tinfoil on top of it.
He gave us those two extra pieces.
Because she was bringing, we were in with him, she brought in an entire another tray. I guess it was for one of the defensive backs. Didn't get into a whole lot of detail, but there were two servings left and we got those while we were talking to him.
Right. We had never had that. You had never had it, right?
I had seen it. I saw it earlier when the defensive backs were over at his house. They were playing Jenga, and I think Tyler Bride won, and then they all had honey bun cake, and it looked like a lot of fun.
Right. I had never had this until we left. I got back to my truck, and I was like, okay, I got to see what all this hubbub is about. All of the hubbub does not do it justice. My goodness, that was the greatest thing I think I've ever eaten. It was absolutely fantastic. And then we go to Hail Southern Live that night. She shows up.
She had three more trays. No.
No. We might still be comatose on that one. But she goes, well, how was it? And you, my friend, said, you can never bring that back. And I looked at you like you had three heads.
And I definitely didn't eat it in two bites. Definitely didn't. That definitely didn't happen.
No, of course not. But you said that she couldn't bring it back, and I said, speak for yourself. I'll have his serving. And then she brings a whole honey bun cake to the tailgate stage, and you would have thought Frank would have gotten $1 million for Christmas.
What did he say? I didn't get a chance to hear that. I was an impromptu MC.
Not much,
MC
because his mouth
was
full.
I was up at the front during the Rock the 90s concert, and I didn't have a chance to hear what he said.
Well, you missed out, because we ate it, and we ate all of it.
We ate it.
And it was fantastic, as always. She said it was not the prettiest looking one, and she apologizes. It doesn't matter what it looks like.
Because when I eat it, I'm not going to remember what it looked like.
No, it doesn't matter one bit what it looks like.
But for the throngs of people that are watching this edition, get you some honey bun cake.
I'm telling you, she could open a business and make millions.
Here.
Yeah, off me.
Right.
Anyway.
I just put up a stand right by the charter flight this Friday and just watch the money go out of people's wallets. She don't take charge either. It's all cash.
Yeah, no. I'd be broke. Anyway, enough of that side tangent.
That was good.
But you look back at the Gardner-Webb game for Georgia Southern football. It ended up being a 30-25 victory for Georgia Southern over Gardner-Webb. And part of the story, and we talked about it at halftime, Coach Lunsford mentioned it to Russ going into halftime. Every drive that Georgia Southern had in the first half, you scored on.
Mm-hmm.
Granted, it was a 49-yard field goal by Britton Williams. Gerald Green punched in a touchdown. Cam Ransom hooked up with Chase Hancock for a touchdown. And then Britton Williams with a 25-yard field goal. You score on all four of your drives.
That's another thing. Only four drives the entire first half.
Right, but you ran about 197 plays.
46 snaps, which... could not tell you if that's ever been done in Georgia Southern history. I'm not going to look that one up. Did have 103 plays against East Carolina 35 years
Good
ago or so.
Good night.
103 plays in one game. So I'm going to
regulation?
Guess. In regulation, yeah.
Good night, Olive.
That was during the days of Tracy Ham.
Whew. I bet you he was tired after that one.
But I'd have to... that would be the one where I would start. And it hasn't happened very often where Georgia Southern has run this many plays that quickly. But new tempo with Doug Roos finally getting to call his system instead of the last three games where you were making it work with what was installed. But enough was there to say, let's ramp it up a little bit and run this attacking no-huddle style. And it resulted in a lot of quick snaps.
And Coach Lunsford talked about it today at the press conference that it wasn't a great first half, but it was a good first half. When you score on four out of four drives, That's exactly what you're looking for. You're looking for points every time you get the ball. You got it in the first half. Would you have liked to got a touchdown or two extra? Absolutely. But at the end of the day, you're still going into the halftime locker room up 20-6, and you've scored on all your drives.
And to keep from overreacting too early, because after week one is the perfect time to overreact, and we know that, look, everybody says you make your biggest improvement between week one and week two. It doesn't always happen that way, but that's a common phrase. It's going to happen this week. We'll find out when we do this next Monday. But the first half, mentioning Georgia Southern's 46 plays, Cam Ransom, his first official snap on a fourth down and two from the 17. That's another part. Georgia Southern went for four fourth downs in the first half. They hadn't gone for it that much on a fourth down period in 6 years. They did it in one half. Ransom's first play is a play fake. Throws to a guy who doesn't touch the ball in practice. The only way Chase Hancock touches the ball is if he goes to the trophy case. Catches a wide-open 17-yard touchdown pass, first of his career. And it's from a lefty, which hasn't happened here in more than a decade. And then he leads the two-minute drill, going 5 out of 5, hitting Bo Johnson 3 different times, thankfully to have Chase and Bo back after their season-ending injuries last year. And defensively, just 124 total yards for Gardner-Webb, primarily because of running so many plays and keeping that offense off the field. But a third of that came on that one touchdown pass that gave the running Bulldogs the lead. Outside of that, Georgia Southern played a good half. I think if you score a touchdown on that final drive of the second quarter, it may have been a great half.
Yeah.
It borderline would have been, but they wanted to make sure they got something considering they were getting the ball to start the third quarter. It was good. In the second half, though, we saw the things that have been holding the team back a little bit in 19 and in 20. You had a chance to finish off Gardner-Webb, and you didn't do it. And they admitted that.
Yeah.
Everybody we talked to, and Coach Lunsford said he didn't have to say anything in the locker room. This was player-led. We talk all the time about having a player-led team. They did it. They stepped up. They're the ones that said what needs to be corrected. No celebrating. Yeah, you won by 5. And you celebrate the fact that you're 1-0, but understanding that this week it gets amped up quite a bit against an FAU team that you beat last year. But in the second half, opening drive, if that's a touchdown, maybe it's blowout Jones. After that, Gardner-Webb has to punt back. Maybe the next drive, if you score there, could be a blowout. But as soon as Gardner-Webb went 90 yards in those back-to-back plays and got it to an 8-point game, it was kind of game on.
And Coach Lunsford brought up the point where he thought the momentum changed, and I hadn't really thought about when it actually shifted, because you felt like going into the locker room, again, you're up 20-6 at halftime. You felt like Georgia Southern had the momentum on their side. It's not exactly what you were hoping for, but you're still up 20-6. You feel like you have the momentum going in. You're getting the ball coming out.
You had outscored them 17-0 in the second quarter.
Correct. And then you come out in the second half, and the momentum definitely changed to the Gardner-Webb side. It was just a matter of when. And I think Coach Lunsford was right on the money. It's when Cam Ransom was trying to run for the first down. It looked like from our vantage point that he had gotten the first down, but after looking at it on replay, the ball popped out of his hands before he got to the first down, fumbled it out of bounds.
One of these deals. I think they would have had to measure it, but once it gets fumbled, it goes back to that, and there's nothing you really do about that.
And so that's when it kind of felt like, and that was a fourth down play, so it was a turnover on downs to Gardner-Webb. That's where it felt like the momentum started to shift in the way of Gardner-Webb, and then they just kept running with it, and not in the sense of actually running with it, because they were using a lot of short passes, and then using the short pass to set up the long balls that they threw. And Coach Lunsford talked about it again earlier on this afternoon, how the three long balls that they had, if you don't have those, it's a completely different game.
The same thing happened against Campbell to start last year, but Georgia Southern was the one that had to rally, and they did, to win by 1 point. Granted, 33 guys missed that game. You were down to your threes and fours in several different positions on defense that affected things. But it's also the first game of the season. Whether you're healthy or not, you don't know what it's going to look like because the opponent changes, the atmosphere changes. You had 100% capacity. Hadn't had 15,000 people in that stadium in 2 years. All the new offerings. There was a different kind of sizzle to Paulson Stadium because we just hadn't seen it that full in so long. But they hook up 3 times for 40-plus. Once for 50-plus on that double pass. That's what got it to 20-12. That's what hampered that pass defense at the beginning of last year. You think about those three games, Campbell, Louisiana, and then ULM. Georgia Southern was giving up nearly 300 yards a game through the air, just through those three games. Yeah. But then they got it fixed. Derek Canteen became a freshman All-American. Justin Birdsong emerged. You got Kendrick Duncan back from injury. Anthony Wilson became a guy that could be trusted. Daryl Baker was solid for 13 games last year. But in this instance, Gardner Webb found that its quick passes could get that secondary to respect it enough, and as much zone coverage as Georgia Southern runs, he found those 12 to 17 yard routes a little bit later, and he also hit 4 of 40 plus. Well, they hit 4 as a team, 3 of them coming from Fisher. And then offensively, yeah, 5 of 5 in the red zone is terrific, but only 3 touchdowns. You're an option team. You know that that's got to be at minimum 4. You had first and goal at the 5 late in the third quarter. That just becomes a field goal drive. At any of those points, you feel if you get into the end zone, you may put it away. But then late, you get the touchdown to make it 30-18, and that's not putting it away. That's at least stretching it out a little bit. But it was another one of those examples where the lead was as big enough as it was early, where one or two possessions would have given Georgia Southern complete hold of that game.
Looking back throughout some of the numbers, and Logan Wright had one spectacular game, 177 yards on 26 carries. He had a rushing touchdown as well. And you didn't have J.D. King this past Saturday. Again, precautionary measures, trying to get him back from that ACL injury. You don't want to rush him too quickly back. But having Logan Wright step up and be the guy in the backfield, and it seemed like every time he touched the ball, it was 3, 4, 5 yards. It was really special to see what he was able to do and step up.
He was more important considering that Gerald Green didn't play the final quarter and a half. Yeah. He was knocked out with the injury. Now, we don't know about anybody's status going into this weekend. As soon as we know, that'll come from Coach Lunsford or Sports Information. You saw Jaylen White get it here and there. But of the 65 carries, Logan had 26 of them. Yeah. He had never come close to that. 177 by far his career long. And he got some help from Amari Jones, 19 touches for 98 yards, both of those career highs as well for a guy that hadn't played quarterback since his senior year of high school. But you saw just how tough Logan is to just slow down.
Yeah.
And I made this comment in 2018 when he was still a freshman. He's 6 feet 230, and he's so broad everywhere, there's nothing to grab. If you grab something, you're going to slip off of him. And he's fast enough where it looks like if you try to stop him, he's going to crush you.
Yeah.
He's one of the most put-together running backs that's been here because he combines that power with that speed. And so many times, it's that Adrian Peterson element where he's going to gain something. And AP had that crazy stat. I don't think he got tackled for a loss his first 2 years here. Something like, I'm probably butchering that, but Logan's been tackled for a loss 7 times in 200 and some carries in his career. You just don't get him behind the line of scrimmage. Now, one of those happened on Saturday on the third and goal play where Coach Lunsford said, look, we get that D lineman take care of. It's a walk-in.
Yeah.
That touchdown gives you the firm grasp, and it gives you the blowout. But instead, it's another one-score game, and this time, Georgia Southern was able to hold on.
The thing that you take away from Saturday, and you touched on it a little bit, that Coach Lunsford walked into the locker room not knowing what necessarily to expect, but he had walked in to hear the guys talking about what they had to correct, what they needed to do, so he didn't have to go in and essentially break up a celebration. One, that's good to see. And then two, being able to see that's game one. Let's step back. Take a minute.
This is where you need to breathe deeply so the overreaction doesn't overwhelm what actually went on.
Yeah, give me a 30. Let's make it a full start. Is it what you wanted to see? Absolutely not. No. Everybody would tell you that. But at the end of the day, it's game one. You're going into game two, and yes, it's a much more formidable opponent. It's a very, very strong defense that FAU has. We'll dive into that a little bit later on. But it's not like these guys are content with what they saw on Saturday.
you saw a lot of individual performances that you can be happy with, and we've spoken about those already.
Yeah, I mean, you had 500 yards of total offense.
On 85 plays. Georgia Southern hasn't done either of those in 4 years. You got to go back to the 2-10 season of 2017, last time of 85 plays and 500 yards. It was up-tempo, more plays, more yards, more points. Georgia Southern got to 30, and typically that's been good to the Eagles since moving up to the FBS. But as a team, they'll tell you that the only thing that they're happy about is the fact that they won the game.
Yeah.
They want to get to a point where they can put people away and let that mentality carry them through the rest of the season. Because if this continues, you saw it last year. Look, I know that there were so many things that were going on last year with COVID, but if you don't put teams away, sports has a way of working itself back around. It takes what it gives. You think about last year, Army, Georgia State, App State. Three games where the Eagles could have put all of them away. And maybe you're talking about a 10 or an 11 win team. You had so many close games earlier last year. Those ended up being three at the end of the year that they couldn't finish. Maybe if some of the games earlier in the year would have been wider margins, maybe if a mentality had been tapped into and maybe deployed a little bit more, you're talking about a different result. But let's not act like 8-5 and a bowl victory was bad. But even they would say, we had a chance to really do something last year, and maybe if they can get to that point this year, that can be the something that they were looking for.
Put Gardner-Webb to bed. It was a 30-25 victory over the Gardner-Webb running Bulldogs. The Eagles 1-0 going into their first road trip of 2021. It's against the Florida Atlantic Owls down at FAU Stadium in Boca Raton.
Hootie-hoo. Oh, that's kind of
yeah, sorry. No, that's the other way.
Yeah. We'll see them in baseball.
FAU 0-1 on the season. They fell to Florida this past weekend, but it was a 35-14 victory for the Gators, and it was a game that was probably a lot closer than Florida thought it was going to be against FAU. It was just a 14-0 lead at half, but it's an FAU team. We've talked about the defense a couple of times already, but start offensively. You've got a new signal caller for the FAU Owls in Nicosi Perry, the transfer in from Miami. And everybody has talked about what a difference he is going to make at that quarterback spot.
If you're a fan of college football, you watched him in the Cheez-It Bowl last year against Oklahoma State when De'Aaron King tore his ACL. They got down big against the Cowboys. Perry is the one that came in, almost led them to a dramatic comeback victory. But he was also the guy that De'Aaron King was brought in to replace. Now, he was fine. 24 touchdowns, 10 picks in his career there, but he only completed 52% of his passes. He is a capable dual-threat guy, but he is more of a passer than a runner. And unfortunately, his offensive lines have not been very good in his career, so he's had to take a lot of hits. He got sacked 6 times on Saturday against Florida. He also lost a fumble. They also had another fumble lost on a botched fly sweep on a handoff where last year's quarterback, Javion Posey, was coming in motion, and he fumbled a handoff. Now he's back to playing wide receiver, even though he did get a couple of snaps at quarterback with, you know, they've got a new system, too. So as part of that, new OC, new DC. That offense, though, they'll give it to any of 5 different running backs. They've got a ton of athleticism at wide receiver. They're really happy about their tight end position, though.
Yeah.
A year ago, that was a position that saw a lot of injury. Remember, Michael Irvin's son was a tight end but didn't make the trip to Statesboro. He was hurt. Now you've got John Mitchell, who didn't play last year in that game because of torn ACL, didn't play at all last year. He's bulked up. They've moved him to tight end. And that's a group where they average about 6'5", 240. And Mitchell's kind of the baby of that group, even though he's gotten a little bit bigger. But he had 4 catches against Florida. They can move the ball.
Yeah.
They had 11 drives. This is what Willie Taggart said in his press conference earlier today. They had 11 drives against Florida. 7 times they got into Florida territory. Sound familiar to last year? Florida Atlantic moved the ball against Georgia Southern.
Yeah.
But 4 straight drives, they turned it over. They just still have this. It's kind of like Georgia Southern where they struggle to finish things. In their case, it's finishing drives. Georgia Southern, it's sometimes finishing games. But you look on the other side how good that Eagle defense was to force 4 straight turnovers and win what turned out to be, it was an ugly game a year ago in Statesboro last December, but it was also one of the better wins of the year against a team that came in 5-1.
Yeah, again, it was a 20-3 victory last year towards the tail end of the season, the second-to-last regular season game of the season. It was after the regular season was supposed to be over, but because of the reschedule, you had to add that one and Appalachian State back to the end of the schedule. But you talk about any one of five guys for Florida Atlantic that will run the ball, and again, they're not necessarily a run-heavy team, just 92 rushing yards against Florida last week, or this past weekend, when they threw for 261. But you've got five different guys, and it almost feels like what we talked about whenever we did the position breakdown of Georgia Southern running backs, yeah, that they don't really care who is in. It's just a matter of they've got to have somebody with fresh legs to run the football.
It's a room that's had a lot of injuries the last 2 years. They lost what was at one point the number one running back recruit in the country. B.J. Emmons was there a year ago, but he had a slew of injuries when he was at Alabama before transferring. He has since moved on, but the other four guys, or rather three of the five, were there last year. One is a transfer from South Florida who's the prohibitive starter. All 5 feet five, 175 pounds of Johnny Ford.
Yeah, I had to double take when I was putting that on our sheet.
He can boogie. He is fast, and he averaged about 7 yards per carry in 2 years with South Florida, one of Willie Taggart's former stops, but he didn't play for Taggart there. Still, he was somebody that had just over 50 yards rushing. Also, Malcolm Davidson, he led the team with 52 yards, and he was a guy in Davidson that got hurt in that game here last year. Banged up his knee. We saw him on the sidelines with his leg wrapped during the first half. He didn't return. James Charles is somebody that might be listed as their number four running back, but he's a team captain.
Yeah,
that's how much they respect him. He's the number four running back, but he's one of the three captains.
It's so odd, the amount, the rotation, the... It's hard to figure out who is going to be on the field for FAU, but I guess kind of the good thing is, not that they're all the same, but they can do anything with everybody.
And that's what the new OC, Michael Johnson, is trying to figure out. Remember, they had two offensive coordinators last year. Both have since moved on. Michael Johnson comes in. He hasn't called plays in 10 years. He was the offensive coordinator last at UCLA in 2011, but he spent time in the NFL. He's also been an assistant coach for Willie Taggart out at Oregon. He spent 2019 at Mississippi State. His son, Michael Jr., is the number three quarterback, transferred in this year from Penn State, part of that four-man competition during the fall. It was believed that Nikosi Perry had the leg up, and correctly, he has won the job, and he's the best one that they have.
Yeah.
And his numbers were solid. If he hadn't gotten sacked six times, maybe FAU could have made that a much different game. Offensively, though, they look a lot more fluid than they did in that game in Statesboro last year. With Posey, you had an athlete playing quarterback. Yeah, he could run, just not polished as a passer. They do a lot of pre-snap movement, very Matt Canada-like. Remember when he was at LSU and also at Pitt and Maryland? Now he's in the NFL with the Steelers. They try to deceive you with a lot of movement. They'll do a lot of RPO. They'll go no huddle. But with all the window dressing, they had two delay of game penalties, and they had to call four timeouts last weekend. So it's almost as if paralysis by analysis, where we do too much and we lose sight of actually trying to get the ball downfield.
Yeah, and you wonder how much of that is just working out the first game,
sure,
but also how much of that is just something you're going to have to deal with what you run. I mean, at the end of the day, there are some teams that are fine if you have to take a delay a game penalty per game and use three timeouts in a game every game. That's not exactly what I would go for, well, but it's definitely a... And I go back and forth of trying to convince myself if this is a similar offense to what we saw last year or if it's a different offense from what we saw last year. Because like you said, it's a lot more fluid and a lot more of a well-oiled machine, but then you get things that look very much like it did in Statesboro last year.
It's like trying to decipher, in our case, is Doug Ruse's offense that much different from Bob DeBess's? There are wrinkles, there are some schematic things that make it look different, but at its core, it is still gun-pistol option. This is still zone read, RPO. They do some exotic things, but the fact that Perry is an actual quarterback and not...
Yeah,
Posey trying to just run the offense as the quarterback gives them a dimension that they didn't have last year.
Flip it over to the other side of the ball on defense. This is a defense that has a lot of experience on it and a extremely veteran group. that has a lot of playing time, and you can have a lot of games under your belt without a lot of playing time. This is a defense that has both.
And another new coordinator.
Yes.
They're still running a three-man front, but Jim Leavitt, now working at SMU, enter Mike Stoops. This was a pretty big hire. Former head coach at Arizona. Of course, he was at Oklahoma as the defensive coordinator under two different stints for both Bob Stoops and Lincoln Riley. Last 2 years, where was he? He was at Coaching Rehab University as an analyst for Alabama. So we're going to see another one of those later this year against Arkansas State when Georgia Southern plays Butch Jones.
What did you just call that?
Coaching Rehab University.
That's fantastic.
But I'm going to harken back to the LSU game from 2019. Not because I want to talk about what happened that game, but I want to talk about the scheme that LSU used. Dave Aranda at that time was the defensive coordinator. We talked a lot that week about them using what's called a tight front. Now, it's a 3-4 defense, which means three defensive linemen. But what they do, or what they did, and what Florida Atlantic does, they're going to take their defensive ends, Jalen Joyner and Jaden Wheeler, and they're going to play them on the inside shoulder of the offensive tackle. So for a team that's going to try to run the option, establish that belly, the dive, the zone, whatever you want to call it, what the Eagles do with that handoff out of the gun and the pistol, they're going to try to take that away, similar to what Samford used to do with their bare defense. Now, they're not going to be that close together, but the idea is play them on the inside shoulder to take care of the interior. They believe they have enough speed to beat you to the edge. That's where the two overhangs come in, the two outside backers and the 3-4. So they think, okay, we're going to take care of the inside. We're going to bait you to running off tackle and around the end. Well, we've got backers there. We've got experienced defensive backs that are coming up and that are waiting for you. So that's how they try to get you to run what they want you to.
There was a pretty important note that came out of Boca Raton earlier on this afternoon.
Yes.
Willie Taggart's press conference is very early in the day on Monday, which helps out us a lot.
Appreciate you.
Yeah, thanks. But Chase Lassiter, their top tackler from a year ago, he was out with COVID because in the Florida game.
Yeah.
And it was kind of up in the air of whether that was still going to be the case coming into Georgia Southern. But Willie Taggart said, no, he will be available for the game against Georgia Southern. So he will be over on that Sam linebacker side. And he's one of those guys that, yes, Florida kind of did what they wanted on the ground. But he's one of those guys that can be a game changer, just like you talked about dissecting their defense. He's one of those guys on the overhang that is going to step up and plug those holes.
And he changed positions. He was playing in the middle last year in Statesboro, but they moved him to the outside during the offseason. I don't know if he would have kept Florida from rushing for 400, but you'll never know. Yeah. And a lot of that came late. Their backup quarterback had a 73-yard touchdown run one of their last couple of drives to make it look a lot better than maybe it was. But that's an FAU defense that didn't get run on like that last year, except when they played Georgia Southern. Knock on wood. But anyway, Lassiter, 72 tackles last year. That was 14 more than anybody else. And even though he's playing a new position now, that game in Statesboro, he had 15 stops last year.
Yeah.
So it may not matter where he plays. You know that Georgia Southern has to account for him, regardless of whether he's starting or whether he is simply being ushered in as part of their linebacker rotation.
You look throughout this two deep on the defense, and one, you kind of broke down the defense a little bit, but it's also strange to me that they have 12 different positions that they list on their two deep.
Can't play them all.
No, you can't. They've got the star position that's
your hybrid.
Is your hybrid, yeah, between D-line, linebacker, a little bit of everything.
That's when they go 4-2-5. They will run a four-man, and that's the star guy will come in and be their extra defensive back.
But their defense is kind of puzzling because the guys that are listed as the starters, there were a couple of them throughout the Florida game that didn't play a whole heck of a lot.
Yeah, Mond Ross is one of them.
Yeah.
Starter from last year. Only played 4 snaps because he didn't practice last week. So he was only able to work his way into 4 snaps. Now the expectation is that he'll get much more work on Saturday. They have 10 starters back altogether from that team a year ago. The one that they don't have back, maybe their best player in Leighton McCarthy, outside linebacker who's unfortunately not going to be able to play professionally. He was signed by the Buccaneers, but they discovered a heart defect, and he's not going to be able to have a pro career. It's unfortunate because I thought he was a really outstanding player. Is that enough to hamper their run D? Well, him and Lassiter being out, I'm sure, had an impact. But with Lassiter back, full go, maybe not full go, another week, knowing that they just gave up 400. They know they got to face an option team, but it's their first home game. And it's also a weekend where they're honoring the late Howard Schnellenberger,
yeah,
who built that program. They're actually doing a celebration for life for him Friday night in Boca Raton. I would think that they're going to be playing with a little bit more this weekend.
They're going to do pregame and I think halftime ceremonies as well for Coach Schnellenberger. But they're also doing something that's kind of off the wall. And Brian Johnson was telling me about it earlier. And it's more of a push to not only help the community, but also to get butts in seats. It's cereal box night, to where if you bring a box of cereal, so you can go down to your local grocery store, buy a 99-cent box of Cheerios, and get into the game for free.
That's different.
So, and from talking to people down in Boca Raton, they're saying that they did this once before, and it turned out to be one of their biggest crowds in history. And so...
So this is also their first game full capacity.
Correct. So they're expecting a pretty good crowd at FAU Stadium in Boca Raton this weekend for Georgia Southern. One, because, like we talked about, looking for a little bit of revenge, Georgia Southern getting the 20-3 victory last year here at Paulson Stadium towards the end of the regular season. But there's a lot on this line for FAU because they feel like, and it's the way a lot of Conference USA, we talked about it plenty with the bowl game last year with La Tech, which
yes,
we know how that went.
Yes.
But Conference USA feels like it's almost, not to the extent of an FBS versus an FCS, but it's definitely a higher conference, quote-unquote, is the way they feel against the Sun Belt.
They were supposed to be the big wave about 10 years ago when realignment was going on. They went the route of markets. Unfortunately, their overall conference success has taken a hit. The Sun Belt, which was in the lower tier, if the Group of Five, I know there's not a whole lot to work with, but they were in that lower echelon. But with the addition of Georgia Southern, Appalachian State, Coastal exploding onto the scene. And
yeah,
they're a 27-point favorite against Kansas this weekend, by the way.
Come again?
They're favored by 4 touchdowns against a Big 12 team. I know it's Kansas, but that's
at what point
that's
does
amazing.
Kansas just say, you know what, we gave it a couple shots, let's move on to somebody else?
Well, that game last year was supposed to be in Conway, but because of COVID, it got moved to Lawrence. It didn't matter because Coastal was going to be Coastal last year, as we found out. Anyway, with Conference USA, they've gone from here to here, and they've flipped places with the Sun Belt. I don't think the Conference USA has completely realized that yet,
yeah,
but the impression that we get from people in Boca Raton is that they feel that what happened in Statesboro was an accident.
No,
they don't feel like they should have lost that game.
No, and there was a slap in the face to them. And Conference USA, and this isn't a rag on Conference USA podcast, but from everything that we gather from Conference USA, and it's not just FAU, it's all the member institutions, they feel like they are at the level of what the American actually is.
And a few years ago, I would have agreed with them.
Right.
But they're just not in a very good spot right now. UAB's really good. And
yeah,
Georgia Southern's going to get a chance to play UAB very soon. And think with FAU, just 2 years ago, they won 11 games.
Yeah.
2 years before that, they won 11 games. But Lane Kiffin goes to Ole Miss. Willie Taggart is trying to keep that going, doing things his own way. But as we know, one coaching change can have you veer off course.
It's going to be, I think this is going to be, we already talked about it, it's going to be a turning point for the season, and I think it'll be a turning point for both seasons,
yeah,
for both Georgia Southern and for FAU.
I would agree.
Because after this, FAU has to go and face Fordham. Take that with what it is.
They'll be fine.
And then you go to Air Force up in Colorado.
So this is almost an option prep, even though they're more flexbone. But what better way to get ready for it than having to have the live scout, in essence.
And then in a couple of weeks, you've got the Shula Bowl against FIU. So this is a big game for both sides. You know how Georgia Southern feels, wanting to kind of redeem themselves a little bit after the Gardner-Webb performance, yeah, go down to Boca Raton, really prove what this team is all about. But on the flip side, FAU has a lot to play for because, again, they felt like last year was a slap in the face a little bit,
yeah,
of the 20-3 victory that Georgia Southern had over FAU, and then being able to kind of put everything where they feel everything should be.
I do believe that FAU is a dangerous team, but if
no doubt, no doubt,
they have the same kind of rush defense that they did against Florida, it's going to be a long day for the Owls. Granted, if they're at home with everything else that they could be playing for, you might see a rejuvenated unit. Getting Chase Lassiter back should help that rush defense.
Yeah.
But for Georgia Southern, they just ran for 365, and they beat FAU last year, so we'll see what kind of confidence they can maintain, and we'll also see if the Eagles can do their part as the Sun Belt invades South Florida this weekend, because Texas State is at FIU, App is at Miami.
Oh, I didn't realize all that.
So there are three Sun Belt teams that we're going to be occupying South Florida. There's three teams within 70 miles of each other.
Oh, my. If the time's all timed up, we could make this a lot of fun.
The two of them play at 7, and we're at 3:30.
Huh. So could we get there?
Oh, sure. But we wouldn't have a way to get home.
By the way, before we wrap up this week's edition of Inside Eagle Nation, I think a big shout-out needs to go the way of Texas State. Hosting last week, they were hosting Baylor, and everybody kind of has been dogging on Texas State the last couple of years, but Texas State kind of held their own. It was a 29-20 victory for Baylor, but you host a Baylor team, and it never got out of hand in any way, shape, or form.
It became 9 points. Texas State had the ball at the end of the game. They had a safety on the final play, which made it a 9-point margin. You oftentimes look at games like that as needing to win to turn the corner, especially if you're Jake Spavadal. It's year three. This is maybe the put-up or shut-up year. I believe that by the time we get to November and the end of the season, they're going to go back to that game and think, okay, this is where we proved that we could hang with a Big 12 team. I still think that they're a dark horse in the West.
Oh, no doubt.
And look, Arkansas State's going to get a lot of love because of the athleticism they have out there. I think that South Alabama got it right with Kane Womack, and they have a chance to be 3-0 because they go to Bowling Green this weekend, and then they have an FCS game the following weekend at Hancock Whitney. So there's a chance they are 3-0.
Alcorn State.
Okay, so and Bowling Green has not been very good for really ever since the GoDaddy Bowl when Georgia Southern beat them, so you're welcome, I guess. So they've got a really good shot to be 3-0, and who knows with ULM. They finally took a lead against Kentucky, but didn't do much else after that. And with Coach Bowden passing away and Terry Bowden leading the team and Rich Rodriguez as the offensive coordinator, I would like to think that it clicks, because that's a situation that needs to have some happy days.
Yeah.
And then in the East, and just whatever day it is, sometimes it could be App, sometimes it could be Coastal, but don't think that Troy, Georgia State, and Georgia Southern are just going to go play in the corner and say, you guys duke it out. We'll just do what we can and try to get to the...
Yeah, we'll bring up the rear.
To the Montgomery Bowl. No, that's not how this season's going to pan out.
Quick look at what Sunbelt teams panned out this weekend. Coastal Carolina had no problem with the Citadel, 52-14. Appalachian State had a really good performance against East Carolina, 33-19. Both of those games on Thursday. Appalachian State looks really, really good. Much improved from a year ago. And to say last year was a down year, I think a lot of people would take that as a down year. But a big matchup in the top 25. Number 21, Texas, defeated Louisiana 38-18. Kentucky defeated ULM 45-10. Army, no problem at all with Georgia State, 43-10. Baylor again 29-20 over Texas State, and then Arkansas State handled business against Central Arkansas 40-21. Troy, no issues with Southern University 55-3. A lot of touchdown men of Troy there. And then South Alabama with the 31-7 victory over Southern Miss wraps up the Sun Belt Conference.
By the way, a quick note on Barry McKnight at Troy. They officially dedicated the home radio booth, the Ralph Black booth, the late voice of the Trojans that preceded Barry. And there was a really nice photo up on social within the last day or two of Barry receiving a Troy helmet from Director of Athletics Brent Jones, a former Georgia Southern staffer. And everything that everybody has said about Barry is correct. He is an outstanding ambassador for that university. He's one of the best you're going to hear, and he's also one of the top people that we come across.
Oh, without a doubt.
I always love seeing Troy in any sport because
that man does not have a bad day.
Well, there's something about going to Troy when you're driving in the middle of nowhere and this gorgeous campus just pops up and you've got a lot of different eating options. We've made so many friends in Troy, mostly because of the Barry impression, but it is a place that we always enjoy, and anytime we see Barry and Jerry, you can't help but be in a good mood.
No doubt. But That will wrap up this week's edition of Inside Eagle Nation. This weekend, Georgia Southern at FAU. First road trip of the season as they head down to Boca Raton. 3:30 the kickoff from FAU Stadium. We'll be on the air with the Cutwater Tailgate Show starting at 1:30.
Band travels for the first time this year. We've got a new city. We've got to find somewhere to eat.
Didn't you tell me you had found a couple of places?
We're taken care of.
Okay.
Big shout to the voice of the Owls, Ken LaVica. He's on the air right now doing the Florida Atlantic Coaches Show, but shout to him for the assistance, and be nice to see him. He's a wild child, but he's a good dude.
About somebody with a lot of energy? My goodness.
Former Sun Belt team. Florida Atlantic was in the Sun Belt for almost a decade, and he remembers his time with a lot of the guys that we work with now very fondly, but since they made the move to Conference USA.
But again, 3:30 the kickoff down in Boca Raton. We'll be on the air at 1:30 with the Cutwater Tailgate Show. Make sure to check out this week's Hail Southern Live from Bishop Fieldhouse. It's a 7 to 8 p.m. on Thursday evening over from Bishop.
Blue Mile Catering is taking care of the food and the drink. Just show up. We'll take care of you. If you need the family taken care of, you can play on the field. Lights will be on at the stadium. Not going to get a whole lot of opportunity to see Coach Lunsford live, still dealing with some COVID issues in the community, but this is one where no tickets, show up at 6:30 when the door is open. We'll talk Georgia Southern football, and then we'll be on our way to Boca.
Until Thursday, for the voice of the Eagles, Danny Reed, this is Colin Lacey saying so long, everybody.
You've been listening to Inside Eagle Nation, powered by Learfield, the official podcast of Georgia Southern Athletics.